copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Today we're going to look at kind of a broader picture of what's the impact of social media and why is it so impactful in the first place? Because, you know, when it first came out, people thought it was going to be a fad. It's not gone away. It still has a great impact on the globe and the people in it, and we'll see what some of that impact is. But then we'll unpack a little bit, why is it such? Why is it such an important tool that's out there? If you want to download the entire presentation, if you go to steveloez.com/ELF2014, the presentations on social media from all 3 days are there. Just download them and do what you want with them. So there's a couple of things I want to make sure we hit. One is basic stuff. What is social media? Just to make sure we're all on the same page. And then we'll look at why is it so effective, as I mentioned, in influencing people? Why does it seem like some people are even addicted to social media? And what's the drivers? What's the cause of that? How do people think about it? How do people think about it? Why is it so effective if used correctly by an organization, a mission, a marketer, whatever the case might be? Then we'll look at some of these examples of big impacts that it's made in the way in which we live, the way certain industries have changed because of social media in the first place. And then we're going to look at some of the pitfalls. Because not all of social media is good. Not all of the results of social media are good. It can actually render some people somewhat helpless, which is a shame. So we'll look at some of those things because it's direct, whether it's used for good or whether it's not used for good, the impact of some of those things is actually the same. So a couple of you were in the group yesterday, but I'm going to ask this again. What is social media? What constitutes social media? What is it? You guys are all here. You know it.
Facebook and the blogs.
Come on, that's from yesterday. What else? What's the definition of social media? You have social media and social networking. What's the difference? They're really the same.
Yeah, the means of social
networking. Yeah, one's more of the tool and one's more of the action of. So the websites and applications, right? That's what we consider social media itself. And then social networking is using those to actually connect, share information, and so forth. Basic information, but we gotta make sure we're all on the same page so we understand the rest of this, right? What's the purpose? Why do we use social media in the first place? Why do you use it? Influence. What else? That's the ultimate goal.
Awareness,
trust, loyalty. What else? You're cheating.
Connect. Just remember.
Connect.
Yes.
What else? But it's good because we got to have this down pat. Why else do we use social media? Why do you use social media?
Speed of communication.
Publicity. What else? The list goes on and on and on. Identity. Oh, that's an interesting thing. Some people don't exist outside of social media. How many of the profiles are actually fake? You know, they say it's about 21% of all the profiles on social media are fake. That the person that they say it's supposed to be is not actually the person that it is. It describes somebody other than the actual individual person for various reasons. But keeping in touch, sharing information, measuring the impact of service, building your audience, monitoring trends. What do I mean by monitoring trends? So if you're going to use social media for the purposes of your organization, what do I mean by monitoring trends or measuring the impact of services?
Be on top. So
stay on the top of the trends that are actually in social media. But what about using social media to monitor specific trends? Not about social media, but about other things. What do I mean by that?
Research.
I said it yesterday.
Research.
Research about what?
Observation
of what? Culture, what else? Yeah, think about it. Social media is a great tool to find out what other people are interested in. So if you use it to figure out what the communities you're trying to get to are interested in, now you have something that you can create content around. So it's not always just pushing content out. It's about understanding what people need. What are they talking about? What is interesting to them? What are the trends that are happening that they're talking about on social media. We can't forget that side of it. We have a tendency just to take information and blast it out. That's what most people do, unfortunately, until they figure some of these other things out. So it's used for a lot of different reasons. And then Victor said the last one, which is actually the most important, influence. This is the key. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on what side you're on, influence is the thing that we're going to really talk about today, because it can be positive and it can be negative. And it happens to be both in many instances. So when you look at social media, when did it evolve? Let's kind of get the history down. And Victor, you were here yesterday, and so were you. So you got to be quiet. You can't cheat. Okay? So I just got to lay the foundation here. When did social media really start? What's kind of the genesis of the first 20 years and then the last 10 years? So when did it really start? When did the first email get sent? Does anybody know? Heard this story 100 times. 1970. 1970 was the first email between two computers. It didn't get masses until 1980. And then I mentioned this yesterday. 1980, my handle, my email address would have been, you know, shortbaldguy@gmail.com or something like that, because that was the age of where people started to create these crazy usernames and so forth. So 1970 is really the first email. The 1980 are these hilarious screen names. And then blogging came about shortly thereafter. And blogging didn't actually catch on right away. When Blogger and LiveScribe and some of the other tools came out, it was a little bit after that that these things started to come up. You remember Friendster? How many of you remember Friendster? Exactly. You do? That's exactly my point. You know, there are so many things that came up before Facebook and Twitter and so forth that have now kind of fallen away because of all the changes. LinkedIn in 2003. Most people don't realize LinkedIn that came out before Facebook. But it didn't really get popular until about 2006. So what came after LinkedIn? Yeah. But what was in between? Do you remember that? MySpace? It was out. It was real popular with the teens in North America for a period of time. And then it kind of fizzled off. And it's actually becoming popular again under a completely different platform in the United States. And they say 2014 is supposed to be the year of MySpace. Well, that's yet to be seen. But it just gives you a sense of some of the things that have changed. 2004 with Facebook, 15% of the world's population uses Facebook. Now keep in mind, the entire world population does not have access to the internet. So when you look at a percentage of the world that actually does, it's about 40% of the entire world. Not just Europe and North America, but the entire world is about 40%. But 15% of the population actually uses Facebook. And then, of course, YouTube. Right? 2005, Google takes it over. And then we have Twitter in 2006. And right now, 1,000 tweets a second is what's made on Twitter. 1,000 tweets a second. Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I'm sorry, 100,000 tweets per second. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Depends.
What do you mean it depends? On what? How much of what's out on Twitter is noise? It's irrelevant. It means nothing. I tell you what burger I ate this morning for lunch, right? I tell you what drink I had after dinner. Is that important really to anybody? Yeah, they say it's about 83% of what's on Twitter is noise. The difficulty with that type of volume, that volume is great because it can create influence, but the difficulty is you got to weed through all the noise that's out there in the first place. So there's a pro and a con to having that type of reach by a tool such as Twitter. Tumblr? Do you guys remember Tumblr? It's still operational. Yeah. More blogging, but that's kind of what the... So Spotify, everybody knows Spotify now. Then, of course, you had Instagram, Pinterest, and now Vine is the thing that's happening. Of course, everything has kind of moved to pictures, videos. That's what everybody tends to gravitate towards. They say about 63% of people are visual learners. We're stimulated more by what we see versus what we read. That's why those are picking up so quickly. So there's been, if you look at the first 20 years, from 1970 on, it was kind of slow. But look at what's happened in the last 10 years, really since 2003, 11 years. So think about what's going to happen over the next 5 years, because that change, that rate of change, continues to get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. The impact, however, continues to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And we'll see some of the actual impacts of that. So what does social media influence today? Give me examples of what social media influences, how it influences the world today. So what's the negative side of that? Blogs and comments and so on. Is everything online real? Just because it's online, does that mean it's right? What are the other influences? What else is happening because of social media? Yeah.
It's amazing that our government officials begin to announce official news on their Facebook pages now. So it becomes authoritative because then it gets into SME like one day later.
Yeah. Governments, organizations, agencies are all starting to use it. But let's kind of look and first say, why is it such a big deal? Why is Facebook and Twitter and all the other social mediums, why is it so effective at influencing? What's driving it to be so effective?
Reaches out to many.
Why else?
I know who likes something or not, so I can get real information. If my friends like something, that's worth to read.
Especially if it's a friend of yours that you trust, that drives more of that. So if you like it, they like it, you're going to look at it. You like it, somebody else is potentially going to look at it, and so forth. What else? What else is it starting to affect? What do marketers understand?
Very convenient.
It is very convenient.
Any second of the day.
But what are the drivers? So if you're the marketer for your organization, your mission, what have you, you're trying to get a message out, I'm the individual you're trying to reach, why does it have such a hold of me? What's driving that? Why do I spend so much time on social media today?
Fellowship.
What?
Fellowship,
maybe. What else? Think about it from a marketer's perspective. There are certain things that go on by me, the individual, that gives marketers ammunition to keep using social media because I gravitate, or at least the younger generation, and now even the older generation, gravitates towards social media.
Because this is mostly the only space you are present.
What do you mean? Oh, they can only reach you potentially on social media and so forth.
They won't reach you if they don't. They won't reach young people by mailing any commercials. They won't even reach them by commercials on TV because less and less young people are watching TV. So
they're watching YouTube.
Well, yes,
but the information they have on what you're interested in and what you do everything allows them to absolutely pinpoint the kind of person you are, your activities, your interests. They want to market to you, my goodness, they can figure out. They can tell you the kind of book you want to read.
Absolutely they can. So why though? Why do, as a consumer of social media, or think about yourself as a consumer of social media, why does it have such a it's wrapped around you? It's so influential in the way we do things today. Why is it? What are the actual drivers?
Well, we're social creatures in the first place.
Keep going with that. Now, that's some of the positive things about it. What are the maybe not so positive things that, as marketers, we understand about people and their use of social media? So what is it, though? Because there's certain things that, as humans, we're wired to... I'm not sure we're wired to be, but we end up falling into certain traps. Marketers grab a hold of it, and that's why they use social media so well. If you're trying to get to your audience, you need to understand this too. It's not manipulation, it's just understanding how people think.
Sure.
So how do they think?
Well, I know that the first rule of communication is know your audience.
Yes, know your audience, absolutely. So keep going with that. You've said two things now that tie right into each other. You're going down the right path. So, okay. So there's going to be five things we're going to look at. And the first thing is this fear of missing out. We know that we can have instant access to everything. So you keep your phone right next to you because every time your buddy sends you a tweet or your girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, sends a tweet, posts something, you have this desire to be the first one to know about it. How many times have you gone to bed, left your phone next to you, it chirps or buzzes, and you think, I'm not going to get it. And you roll over. And 30 seconds later, you're grabbing that phone because you want to know what somebody sent you and 18,000 of your closest friends. Most of us do that. There's certain folks that don't. You may not. But most of us have done that or continue to do that, myself included. So marketers know this. We need it instantly. We are in an instant society, especially when we look at the younger generation. You know, microwaves are now slow because we're so impatient. You know, it used to be everything was cooked on a stove and we waited an hour and it was prepared. Then we got microwaves and everybody thought, wow, this is great. But now 3 minutes to cook a piece of meat is way too long. It's the same with information. We know it's easily accessible. So that the penetration, marketers know that the penetration of social media is so great because one of the items is this fear of missing out. We want to be the first ones to know about it, and we want to be the first ones to share it. We're the first ones. I got it done. So keep going down that path. What else do they know about us as social media users?
Belonging.
Belonging, what about it? That kind of goes back to we're naturally social. We want to belong to a group and so forth. Absolutely. Let's look at it this way. Here's the negative side. Ego. What do I mean by ego? This is a real driver behind social media.
The way people can hear or listen.
Yeah, it's actually kind of ties into the first one, right? Information. We need to know it first. Secondly, we generally use social media because we want to send information. We also want to receive because we want to know about it first, but we really look at an audience as feeding our ego. Why else do we post about the cheeseburger I ate for lunch? It's my ego that I'm filling when I post those things out. And marketers also know because of your ego, you have reach. So if I can get to you, you're going to get me to your 18,000 closest friends. It's a natural progression because they understand how social media users work. Now, there's varying degrees of these things, right? Well, you may be driven more by one than the other, but the reality of it is we all have a little bit of this in each of us. It's been studied over and over and over. So what else along these lines? Because there's five of them that are common in what social media marketers look at. Perceived value. What do I mean by perceived value? Have any sense of what I mean by perceived value? How easy is it for a marketer to manipulate you with social media? It's pretty easy.
Yeah, it sure is.
And they don't have to give up anything. So I'll give you an example of that. I mentioned clout up there. I mentioned clout yesterday. But clout is basically a tool that allows you to see what your presence is online. It's kind of measuring awareness. We talked about that a little bit yesterday, right? And it gives you a score up to 100 of how impactful you are online. It's looking at your blogs. It's looking at your social media, all of that. And how it gets out, who it gets out to, and so forth. So American Airlines in the States, along with clout, said, if you buy these types of tickets with American Airlines, we will increase your clout score. Consumers fell all over it because they were so worried about what their clout score was. So the average clout score used to be 51, 52 or so. Of those people that actually used clout, it went up to about 70 because they bought so many airline tickets. They had this perceived value that I need a big clout score. Now, it's nice to have, but they could manipulate them to do almost anything they want because of the perceived value of the clout score. It's kind of like having likes on Facebook, which you mentioned yesterday. And that's real popular here. It's still popular in the States, but it's not as popular as, especially after hearing you talk yesterday, as it is here in Europe. It seems to be even more popular here in driving. But perceived value is something. Perceived control. What do I mean by perceived control? So every social media site will say, well, you can filter whatever you want to see. So if you don't like to hear this noise, you want to hear this other noise, you can filter exactly what you want to see. What does that start telling marketers? What you want to see. How do they leverage that? They give you what you want to see. But as a marketer of your organization or whatever it might be, understanding what other people are filtering out, you don't want to provide that level of content. You want to provide content that you know your audience is looking at. And by seeing what they filter out, you get a better sense. So marketers love this. And then the last one, the social comparison, social self-esteem, which goes right to what we're talking about. The likes on Facebook. We'll actually see a kind of a negative side to that in a little bit. There was a study that was done by Harvard, and it's amazing what it found on how impactful social media is over real relationships, actually. It's ridiculous where we've come, unfortunately. That's one of the downsides of this. But it's so influential because marketers can use it to address specific needs. They know how we're going to react. That's why it's so pervasive and why social media tends to be so successful if you understand this and you use it the right way. Does that make sense? Following me so far? So what are some global impacts of this? So if they know how to market to us, some people would say they know how to manipulate us to a certain extent, right? Marketers, we know how to manipulate others. What's the big impact? What's kind of some general global impacts? And then we're going to look at some specific industries and how it's impacted industries so we can see this effect. Some of these are much more positive, but then we're going to look at some of the negatives on this too, because it's important to understand both sides of this. So what are some of the global changes based on social media? What's happening? If we look at some of the big things, right, what has it driven? What's been the global impact? Again, 1 in 7 people on the earth are on Facebook. We saw the 100,000 tweets. 2.5 billion pieces of content are shared daily just on Facebook. Remember we were talking about noise? I mentioned noise. Think about that. 2.5 billion pieces are shared daily just on Facebook. Nothing's ever removed from the internet. Do you know that? Everything is archived. Somewhere it lives. Now, and I'm not talking the United States NSA. I'm just talking about everything is captured. So there are many sites that you can go to take a look at your website from 10 years ago, and there's a page of it archived somewhere. Everything is archivable. The other thing that, I don't want to scare you with this, but anything you place online, even if it's private, it's not private. Just understand that. There are tools and solutions that people use that are questionable, but don't expect anything to be private online. I've seen it done. I've watched it get done. It's amazing. Anyways, so 2.5 billion pieces, 72% of the global internet users use social media, 71% on mobile device. And we all use our phones for it for the most part. And then internet penetration, Western Europe 78 and Eastern Europe 54. So let's look at some of the larger impacts. And I mentioned this one yesterday for the two of you that were in the group yesterday. How has it affected journalism? So when you look at social media, what's been the effect on journalism itself? Everybody's a writer. How else? How else has it affected globally the way we look or the way journalism actually works? Everybody's a writer. What else? There's no filter on it.
Yeah,
because you can't control what people write. But we'll save that for some of the negatives of social media. What are some of the just basic industry changes that have gone on in terms of journalism, both by the journalists and the consumers of journalism? How do you get your news releases today? Think of all the magazines and even in the U.S. that have now gone away, and there's only an online version. And that online version has an app. But part of that app that you have on your phone is instant press releases all the time. So most of us now, it's actually more than 50% now across the globe. Now think of the entire population that doesn't even have access. But 50% of us use social media or some type of instant news release. And you know that when you get that little notification, it's not always accurate. It's the alert. Yeah. Whether it's a social media app or whether it's USA Today or any other global app, that's how most of us get it. 30 bits of information a day from one way or another. Yeah, whether you're seeing it online, on your phone, it really does, through social media, you're looking at your Twitter feed, you're looking at Facebook, whatever the case is, actually, because what marketers will do is they're always testing, right? They throw an idea out there, and if people are interested, if they get a lot of views and retweets or shares and so forth, they know to continue down that path, and of course, if not, then they don't continue down that path. But what about journalists themselves? How has social media changed the way a journalist does their job? And I'm not so sure this is a great thing. 65% of journalists across the globe say that they go to social media first for information. And we've seen some hiccups as a result of that, which I'll show a couple of examples of. I mean, there's hundreds of them, thousands of them on an ongoing basis across the globe where they report something as fact that they found on social media. And was it true? They retract them. So that's... I'm not so sure that that's such a great thing. And then this last one, 55% of regular readers, news readers say they read mostly everything on their mobile device or their computer. We already said that. They're not using the print copy of that anymore. It's too hard. I mean, rarely do I even buy a book anymore. I want an electronic copy so I can have all 50 of the books that I read at the same time as opposed to lugging 50 books in my cart. Now, every once in a while, I want a real book. Like here, we bought way too many to take home, but I mean, that, you just don't find all of those electronically right off the bat. So what about law enforcement? So globally, and I mentioned this yesterday too, globally, 4 out of 5 police officers say they use social media to do investigations, to do other things. So think about this, right? Investigative purposes, and I'm going to give you an example that actually happened this week. Community outreach, soliciting crime tips, notifying the public. You realize there's crazy crooks that actually post pictures of themselves with the stolen merchandise in the house they stole it from. Monday, there was a baby stolen in Quebec. They happened to get a glimpse of the person, the lady who had done this, and they put it on social media. They tweeted it in Quebec on Monday night. 3 hours later, because of that, the lady was arrested and the baby was recovered. Had we not had social media, they would have never got that baby, and it's not that fast. There's some really great reasons to use it because some people are really dumb about what they do and put up on social media. I mean, the flip side of that is you've got to be careful about saying, I'm going on vacation, because now the robber knows you're going on vacation. If they can figure out where your house is or your apartment or what have you, you're in trouble. That's the negative side of it. But it's been really a great tool for law enforcement to use across the globe because you can see examples in every country, everywhere. What about education? I mentioned this one yesterday too, briefly. How has it affected education? Social media. So go think about it even from a university setting. You can go online, access the libraries. Now, that's not quite social media if you're going to their website and so forth. But if you really think about it, so in the United States, 4 out of 5 U.S. professors say they use social media to communicate with their students because they know that generation likes social media, right? Even in Europe, it's 2.5 out of 5. And that continues to grow. It used to be 2, now it's 2.5, and I'm sure it's going to exceed what North America or equals North America. It's an easy way to engage with their professors. That's the other piece of it. They're collaborating all the time. It's no longer, let's meet in the library and talk about the project. It's, let's meet online and we can share everything we have. Notes, pictures, everything online. So there's a lot of value behind this as well, and you can see what's happening. 59% of global students say they use it to discuss topics, and 50% say they use it to talk about school assignments, what we just said. Right? So huge global impact on education, huge global impact on journalism, huge global impact on law enforcement. This can get loaded. What about political awareness? What has social media done in political awareness? What? You can raise political awareness.
Expose.
You can expose things, potentially. You can win elections, potentially. Those that make the noise understand the impact of it, and that's why they make the noise. So what are some examples of how it's impacted things politically? Can you think of any right off the bat?
Obama's election.
It's very, very powerful stuff. I mean, think of some of the things that has actually happened. You mentioned the Obama. It can swing voters, completely swing voters. That has global impact, both positive and negative, depending on how we look at it. But look at some of the stats around this. Young adults, which we know are the most likely to use, but those that are using social media also tend to be the most politically active because they know it. The word of mouth, start knocking on doors. And think about Obama's past, we don't want to get on a political subject, but think about his past experiences about movements. It's about, that's what he did. So he has this, his administration understands the art and finesse of being able to do this. They also understand that the users are highly influenced by this and continue to push this. Yeah, I think it's a almost identical type of strategy. You're just using a different medium, but he does a really good job of combining all the mediums. I mentioned yesterday that social media is very impactful in and of itself, but when you combine it with print, on foot, whatever it might be, it just exacerbates it. It makes it bigger. Exponentially, it makes it bigger. Why do marketers, again, use social media? One of those is that, we want to share it with our friends. We want to be the first person to share that information. They know that, and they leverage that. So they send you the letter hoping that you're going to share it with your best friends.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's the same type of thing. That's what creates the viral nature of a lot of social media that's out there, because they're going to share it. It's as simple as that. But you can get a sense of there's a correlation to who's most politically active and using social media in the first place. So it has a huge, huge impact, and we'll see a couple examples of that here in a second. So what about relationship? Virtual, is it really stronger than real life? You can find your husband or wife. I mean, think about all the sites that are out there. You can lose your husband or wife. Okay, that's the negative side. We'll get to that in a minute. I mean, there's some really great applications. I mean, think about Cheryl's mom, my kid's grandmother, right? She gets to see pictures from Poland instantly because they're uploaded. That's really cool. That helps that relationship with them and their grandmother. That's not a bad thing.
The problem is that the relationship has a part which when we share our burden and our sorrows and so on, this cannot go online. And this is the problem, and always the good things go online, and I'm sick of that, looking at that, wow, how good your vacation was. I'm sick of that. I want real talk, heart-to-heart talk, bad things.
I'm going to show you a stat on this Harvard study here in a second I was shocked when I read it. So disconnect for a period of time, because you can get so worked up about stuff that you're communicating with or see. People hide behind it and say things they really shouldn't say. I mean, that's the negative side of that. Somebody else was going to say something? It does help to reconnect. I mean, these are some of the things. 88% of them, of social media users, said it did help them reconnect with somebody. Somebody I went to high school with, if I wanted to reconnect with them. I mean, there are a lot of positive aspects of being able to do this. And kids in school are saying, look, I use it to get to know students that I can start to hang out with. So it's a bridge. It gets me connected with them. And the next thing you know, we're hooking up at the library, a cup of coffee or what have you, and I've got friends at college. That's just how they think. So there's some really great things that in some instances has allowed somebody who's more of an introvert to get connected with somebody and then go and meet them. Now, you can take that, and there's negative applications to that, but let's talk about some of the positives before we get to some of the negatives here, right? There's some great things going on for certain types of individuals. Not everything on it is bad. I mean, a lot of these are positive. Education is positive. Journalism, maybe. Go both ways. You can get it quick, but is it always real, right? What about businesses? How do businesses use social media? How has it changed the way businesses use them? Why this is important is it could affect, by a business, I'm using very broad brush. It could be an organization. It could be a church, what have you. But businesses are using social media. How do they use it? How has it impacted? A lot of people look at social profiles. But from an employment perspective, 1 in 6 job seekers globally now use some form of online social media or something to look for a job. Because more and more and more companies are being taught use social media to look for people. So now you have to understand that and you have to look for jobs that way, right? 72% of global companies use it from a recruiting perspective, finding people and so forth. And 45% of Fortune 500 companies obviously have a link to all their social media on their career page. But what about on the candidate side, right? 3 out of 4 hiring managers and recruiters check candidate social profiles. What that means is, if you come to me looking for a job, or if I come to you and I need a new head of operations for a mission organization, how do I find out information about them? Well, maybe Facebook. So there has been a couple of situations now that it's gone to court in the United States, where if I look at your social profile and I make a decision to or not to hire you, is that discrimination? But so if you're at a party and you're doing things you're not supposed to be doing and you're crazy enough to put pictures up there, can I make a hiring decision off that? But I will tell you, and I mentioned this yesterday, the exact same happens in reverse. People are savvy enough now, especially the younger generation, the Ys, right? I'm an X, some of you are Xs, and then the Ys. Where's the first place a Y is going now to find information on your organization? Whether it's to contribute dollars, whether it's to work for your company, where's the first place they're going? First place they're going to Google, just general, see your website, do research, and then that's where they get the most information from. Most people that are surveyed now across the globe will say, I'll get about 10% of my information from the website, I'll get the other 90% from social media. What people say about you, which again can be positive and negative, right? What you say about yourself, what information you're putting out there, that gives them a sense of who you are, what your organization stands for, and so forth. Especially if you're looking for volunteers, money, funding for whatever your mission is. I mean, think about the impact of that. And if you're neutral, if you have no information, they're less likely to support you or to give time to you because they have no idea what anybody is saying about you. If you don't have some type of social presence, no awareness, they're wondering partially if you're a real organization, too, how involved are you really if you're not using social media today? So this goes both ways. 1 in 3 employers rejected candidates based on something that was actually on their social media profile. There's an example that I usually use in the United States. Young guy has a job, and he leaves a message for his boss and saying, "Hey, I'm not really feeling good. I won't be in today. I won't be in tomorrow." Proceeds to go to a Halloween. In the United States, we have these Halloween parties, right? You dress up like crazy things. And, well, he happens to take a picture of himself wearing a tutu. Do you know what a tutu is?
No.
It's a little dress skirt kind of dance thing. A man. He's wearing a tutu, and he posts it on Facebook. And, of course, he had been drinking too much, and he's got pictures of all this. And his boss calls him the next morning and says, "Oh, I'm sorry that you're not feeling very well," after he leaves this message that he's not going to be in. "And, oh, why, by the way, I love the tutu." Got him. I mean, this stuff happens. And I'll just one, it's kind of off the subject, but one more item on that. It was not me. It was not with me. It was not me. It was nothing. No, not even in Michigan. Thank you. But what we've got to realize, though, this is key. We teach kids in the United States, especially, that you don't ever post something that ultimately could come back to bite you, because even if you take it down, it's somewhere. You post it, you take it down, there's an archive of it. I'll find it. Somebody will find it. So be very, very careful of that. So there's a positive and negative on this again. And then just on the business side, of course, every marketer knows that leveraging social media along with all the other tools that are out there, it increases awareness, it increases responses. We've seen this. 74% of most marketers across the globe will say that if they do all of this, they actually get some great results, as high as 13% more than just using traditional media channels. So we know it works. What we don't know is how much influence we actually get. We have to look at that. So let's look at kind of some examples of this, and we get kind of a broader picture of this, and then I want to get into some of the negative sides, just so we understand it, and especially the younger generation needs to understand this, okay? So, you know, this big influence politically, we've seen what's happened in the Ukraine, right? We've been following it in the United States. The number of hashtag, you know, the hashtag Ukraine that has come up, all the tweets, all the news that's coming out. I mean, the political awareness of this is absolutely crazy. What happened in the Ukraine, being followed by the U.S., was one of the largest audience of any other event that's happened in recent history, based on what's happened in the Ukraine. I mean, the videos that were coming out. Another example of this is this crazy Occupy Wall Street movement. Do you know what that is? Do you know what Occupy Wall Street is? Okay, tell me what it is, because I don't understand it. It started off that way. That's what it started as. There was so much media, social media and otherwise, about the movement of Occupy Wall Street. Well, they absolutely became famous, and most of it was because of what was going on online. It wasn't as much of the word of mouth. It got picked up online. And most people, after they were in this for about 4 weeks, give or take, if you talk to most people about what do you stand for, they had no clue what even started Occupy Wall Street. But because there was so much of it online, it's cool. I'm going to go to this thing because it's cool. It was amazing, the transformation. So whether you agree or disagree with the premise of it initially is irrelevant. Think about the change. It gives you a sense of the power of social media for, I mean, it'll get people to do stuff that they don't even understand what they're doing it for. It's crazy at sometimes, right? The examples of what happened with the Arab Spring. I was in New York when all the stuff was happening with Mubarak. And I happen to have the guy that I use that drives me around in New York, just because it's crazy. There's no way I'm going to drive a car there. But I have a taxi driver that I've used for years who happens to be Egyptian. And the information that he was showing me of real-time feed that we never even saw here, we didn't see in the United States. You may have seen it here. It was amazing to see how much social media information and video clips of the massacres that were going on real-time that we didn't even see in the United States. I got to experience it because he had the app, the Egyptian app, to get access to some of the stuff, and all his friends were sending him the links to whatever social media they use in Egypt. It was just amazing what happened, but think about how it ignited the community there. I mean, they got a lot of those younger generations to get to the streets. How? Through the use of social media, because it's a community. Egypt is very, very pervasive when it comes to social media. They've been using it nonstop for a number of years. More so than other parts of Europe. Some of them shut the internet completely. Others limited what could actually leave the country, but then they found ways around it anyways, and a lot of that stuff was leaked out through the use of social media again. You know what crowdfunding is? This is something I'm surprised that more faith-based organizations don't do. We don't do enough of this. What's crowdfunding? And it's based upon the breadth of social... It started with social media, this whole idea of crowdfunding.
Well, you raise money for a group to do so.
Yeah, but it's not about raising a lot from a few. It's about raising a little bit from a lot because of the reach. So to go and ask somebody for a donation of $100,000 is not easy. To ask somebody to say, give me $10 or a dollar. I mean, an example of this. This lady on the left here is a school bus driver in the United States. She was roughed up on one of her school buses. There was a teen that kind of beat her up a bit. And you can see she's a little bit older in her age. And what the community tried to do through crowdfunding was raise $5,000 to send her on a vacation. Because when it happened, it was on video. The video went out to social media, and everybody heard about it. So they wanted to raise $5,000. So they went the route of crowdfunding. Give us a dollar. Give us $2. How much do you think they raised? $703,000 in a month using crowdfunding.
Did she retire?
I don't know. I would. But, you know, it went viral. They understood the power of that. A dollar. I mean, most of us sitting in this room can afford a dollar or a pound or a zwother, right? That's only a third of a dollar, but... You know, you get my point here. It's asking many. It's a great tool to use, something that Christian organizations should actually be using more of. So $703,168 is what was ultimately raised.
In Poland, there are several music bands. They raise this way money to produce their records.
Sure. It also gives you that stability, right? So you've got so many people donating so little. If a percent of them falls off, it's really easy to replace them, and you don't feel the loss of that dollar. And the younger generation is really geared towards investing something in a cause. This is a way to get them to invest in your cause, and you can use them. You do this through social media. So how much time do we have left?
15.
Okay, so 15 minutes. So what about the pitfalls? We've mentioned some of them as we've gone through this. Some of this, again, is not in the same order as on the sheet, so that's why you want to download this thing. What are the pitfalls of social media? Potential. Misinformation or disinformation, potentially. Let's look at them in a little different order, right? First of all, can you get addicted to social media? That's one of the reasons why marketers use it, because you can actually get addicted to social media. Now, there's certain organizations that are now looking at it and trying to make it an actual syndrome. Now, I think we probably overuse that term anyways. But the reality of it is there's a lot of addiction, or at least perceived addiction, around social media that people, because of that instant news of needing to know what their friends are doing every second, it's causing some problems. Addicted to likes. 62% of adults worldwide report better self-esteem after they've had some positive interaction online. So it's that important to them that I posted something, somebody likes it, now I feel better. Now, how crazy is that? Because somebody hit like who I may not even know hit liked. I don't know you if you hit like on it, and now all of a sudden I feel better because there's a like. That's what you were kind of mentioning yesterday. It's that emotional driver that ultimately does this. 25% of 18 to 44 say they can't remember the last time their smartphone wasn't next to them. That's crazy. It's always got to be with us. You know, I'm a big, as big of a follower of that as the next guy, but I've learned that now when I get home, the phone goes on the charger, and I don't go back into that office unless I have to, because I've got to get disconnected at some point, because it's always with us. But there are some serious problems with addiction. In fact, so serious that there's actually become groups, support groups for addicted internet users, or not just internet, but social media users, right? Because marketers know that addiction means influence. But it can work for the negative as well. If addiction means influence, I can easily get influenced in a negative way, which we'll see. There's internet addiction camps that I started reading about in China. Because, you know, they use, obviously, social media extremely well in the country. It doesn't go out of the country as much, but they use it really well among themselves. They've created camps because it's such a problem over there to treat this addiction of social media in China. It's the only thing I've ever heard of that has that type of thing. And then a distracted driver dies after posting on Facebook about the song Happy while he's taking selfies. So he's thrilled. You know what a selfie is, right? You take a picture of yourself. I mean, this is how sad it is. People have to be driving talking about how happy they are, taking a picture while they're driving, and then ultimately the individual dies. This is the Harvard study. This is the thing that absolutely shocked me. I read it earlier again today. I got it about, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks ago. I read through it, and I was shocked about it, and then I read through it again. So what the Harvard researchers did is that they were measuring what they consider the pleasure sensation of people when they post stuff online. And it kind of goes back to ego, right? They were measuring the chemical levels in the brain. What happens to the brain? Now, there's some science behind this. Is it completely accurate? I have no clue. I'm not a scientist. But they, when people posted something online, it's the same sensation in terms of the chemical makeup in your mind when you eat chocolate or you're driving a fast car. It's that pleasure sensation. When you interact with your family members and you share that one-on-one stuff with your family members, it actually created less of a sensation than when you post information online. So there was a lower feeling of euphoria in actually interacting one-on-one with these test subjects, the majority of them, as opposed to posting something online. And it goes back to two things. One, that ego, because I can send out too many. I'm kind of hiding behind it. So this Harvard University study, posting personal information, activates this sensation of pleasure in the brain. Less sensation with pleasure. Oh, the one thing was that ego piece to it. The other thing was when you share with your family, you tend to share something that's not as ego. It's a little harder to share that information. So that explained away some of it. But it was amazing to see what the chemical component. If you want to see the study, let me know. I'm happy to send it to you. It was just amazing to actually see what was going on. We'll continue on this. Privacy. How does it affect privacy?
No privacy.
That's what we just talked about, right? It opens the door to not having privacy because you can see just about everything about anybody, right? Most people don't even shut down their social media profiles anyways. You know, you can limit, you can't close, but you can limit who sees your information. Most people don't even know how to do that. They leave everything open. We, as at our organization, we use social media to watch what certain people do as well. It's amazing how many people let everybody see everything about them. And now we have that information. And then wasting time. This is a global issue. This is not a U.S. issue at all. 37% of global issues or global internet users play internet games while at work. So while they should be doing something for their university, for their job, what have you, 37% of them are sitting here doing this, playing games, or on their phone primarily is what they're doing. And most of those games are embedded in social media. So Facebook has Farmville and some other, I don't even know what a lot of these games are. That's where the majority of them were actually going. So the waste of time is ridiculous. 250,000 years spent on social media, the equivalent of 250,000 years spent on social media in 1 month, in November of 2013, just a few months ago. That's crazy how much time is being spent. And on average, almost three and a half hours per day on social media by most social media users. That's a ton. And decreased productivity, that goes back to work. This is the one that you guys all kind of mentioned. This whole idea of loneliness and disconnect, why does it cause that? What happens? Why does it cause that in the first place? Because all I'm doing is communicating with you superficially online. There's no real conversation between us. We may think there's real conversation, but in fact, so many people come out of that. Think of all the suicides that happen because people create a life online and there's no real communication at all. So those savvy marketers know that using social media to create some other type of connection than just on social media is actually the most effective way to use it. But it's unfortunate the number of pitfalls as a result of this. This, you get to create somebody who you're really not, is really what it comes down to. As I said, there's so many fake ones that are actually out there. And then this whole idea of misinformation that, Victor, you mentioned. I know we were talking a little bit about it. I was talking with Stanislav yesterday. Yeah, that's right. And the amount of disinformation or misinformation that's out there is ridiculous. And we need to understand that we've got to filter this information out. If it's online, it must be accurate. Really? How do you combat all this noise that's actually out there? Not going to happen. The information's too free. So this is one of the There's this debate that sometimes goes on, especially in faith-based organizations. Do you use it? Do you not use it? What's the ethics of using social media? What's the ethics of not using social media? Look at the influence that it has on people. We all agree that it has huge influence, right? You look at the studies, the marketers understand why and so forth. There's a lot of noise out there. If we do nothing as faith-based organizations, and the only noise people are getting is the noise that is already out there, they may not do them any good, how do you reach those people? Where most of the noise they believe is what they see online, through social media and so forth. It almost forces you, whether you want to do it or not, it almost forces you to be able to do that. We have to understand that, because the amount of misinformation that's online is ridiculous. I don't even know what the statistics are, because they change all the time, of how much of what's online, generally speaking, is real versus fake. And when it first came out, it was 20-some percent. Now they say it's as much as 70% of the information online is not real. Wikipedia, do you guys use Wikipedia? How much information on Wikipedia is true?
No idea.
Nobody knows. You can fact check some of that information, but nobody knows. But yet so many people reference Wikipedia in papers, in blogs, in emails, and everything, because Wikipedia says that it must be true.
What do you think? I mean, do you have any guess? I
don't know. I mean, I would guess that half of it's accurate and half of it may not be accurate, and probably 20% of it is absolutely just misinformation that somebody wanted to put up there to either maim somebody else or just to share some belief that may not be really what should be shared. But I don't know. A lot of self-editing goes on. I use it for personal and business. But I'm careful about what I put up personal. Right? You want to make sure that it's not too much information for people to see, but for reasons, like I said earlier, so grandma can see pictures of the kids in Poland, it's kind of a cool thing for them. So I'm going to use it for those purposes. I think that's a personal decision. It's almost impossible not to have some personal interaction online. So my rule of thumb with this, like when I do this for college in the United States, for like this thing I did at Madonna University and so forth, what I tell them is, if you would share it with everybody in a room, put it online. If you have a concern about sharing it with somebody in the room, don't put it online.
That's a good one.
Does that make sense?
Say that again, please.
So if you, I don't know most of you that are here, but if I'm comfortable sharing whatever I'm going to share, a picture, a word of wisdom, whatever it is, if I'm comfortable sharing it with all of you, put it online. Who cares? But if I'm not comfortable sharing it with one of you or multiple of you, don't put it online. Because that's ultimately who's going to see. Some of the things that are not politically correct are the things that are true. So keep that in mind. So is it politically correct to share the gospel online? And not in the United States. You would get lambasted for it to a certain extent right now. But is it true? It sure is. So it depends on how you communicate it out. So there's some truth to that, but be careful with that as well. And this is a tricky subject, but that's, I tell everybody, if you'll share it with everybody in the room, it doesn't matter what you're putting online. If you're not going to share it with somebody in the room because there's some uncomfort with it, just don't. It's that simple. So why do we use it? If there's some bad things to it. We already know there's influence. We already know there's lots of bad noise. I already mentioned that, right? If we don't do something to combat some of what's bad out there, we're going to be in trouble anyways. And we can still, as faith-based organizations, businesses, and so forth, if you leverage it the right way, you can use it for good. It doesn't have to be used for bad, because those that use it for bad know how to use it better than us in some instances. So we need to understand that. And then I want to make sure that the one thing I mentioned yesterday, so when I talked about the purpose, so when you go to use social media, do you guys remember what we talked about, the steps behind it, the couple of things you have to understand? You can't forget what's the purpose that you're trying to communicate first, right? So first of all, are you an organization? Are you trying to communicate a cause? You remember seeing that yesterday? Are you trying to get to communicate a belief? That's kind of the first thing, right? What was the second thing that I talked about? First, I talked about you got to understand what the message is, but this is one of the places where people go wrong. You've got to understand the results you're trying to create. Remember we talked about that yesterday? Most people say, well, I just want to build awareness. I want people to understand that who we are. Okay. But why are you using social media? You've got to have something measurable. Clout will measure a little bit of the awareness thing and other tools like it. But what are things that are measurable in social media? What are you trying to accomplish? What are things that are measurable in social media today?
Clicks, followers.
Clicks, followers.
Likes.
And which one are you trying to accomplish? And when? You're going to say, well, I want to try to accomplish all these things. I want to drive attention to an event we're having. I want to increase my followers. I want to drive website traffic. I want to gather content. I want to share information. Or I want conversions. You're going to say, I want to do all that. But you can't do it all at the same time. You have to prioritize. What are you trying to do right now to create that social media strategy to fill one or two or three of those and build upon that before you start getting to all the stuff? Now, what you mentioned about influence, do you remember the cycle of social media? Usually we talk about awareness is what we're trying to do with social media. If we build awareness, what does it drive?
Traffic.
If we have traffic, what do we do with it? We engage. We want to engage with people, right? Why do we want to engage with people?
Trust.
Yes. And what does trust build?
I don't know.
Influence. You had it. Remember, you want to get to influence, but you can't go from awareness to influence unless you do some of those other things when you're trying to use social media for your group, your organization, and so forth. Do it in steps. Make sense?
Yes.
Thank you all.